Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball, GAA.
No matter what montage of clips is done down to the years, you're going to see Kilkenny instrumental and choreographing a lot of their work.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Yellow iPod on Off The Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off The Ball all season.
You're very welcome back to another episode of the League of Ireland pod. Ben Symes here for Stephen Doyle. This week, maybe he's not here because Bowser are in Europe. Maybe it's other reasons. Who the hell knows? He could be touching down in Gibraltar right now. We'll find out next week. I am glad to say, Stephen Doyle is not here. Vinny Perth is here. Vinny, how you doing?
All good, Ben. How are you?
Very well. And Gareth McGlynn is here as well. Gareth, how are you?
All good, Ben. What's going on?
All good. All good. You have a pretty unorthodox week of League of Ireland action over the course of the last week and this week as well. So we had three games last week in the League of Ireland. You had the Louth Derby in Oriel Park, Dundalk 1, Drogheda United 2. Vinny was at that. We'll get his thoughts on that. Waterford 1, Pats 1, a last minute equaliser for St Patrick's Athletic through Aidan Keenan to salvage a draw. And then on Saturday night, Galway United 3, Sligo Rovers 2 in the Connacht Derby. And the fun didn't end there around Sligo Rovers as John Russell has been announced as the Shelburne manager. We'll get on to that in a minute. But very quickly, there's FA Cup action this weekend as well. A couple of standout ties. Cork City versus Shamrock Rovers. Shelburne taking the trip down to Tralee to face Kerry. If we look back to last Friday quickly, Vinny, you were at Oriel Park for Dundalk against Drogheda United. A really disappointing result for Dundalk, but like, this cannot be understated enough how big that was for Kevin Doherty's side.
I think it was absolutely huge for Drogheda. I had a little wry smile, Ben, at the end of the game. So Dundalk were very good for a lot. Pete Kieran said half time, and so did Kevin Doherty. But I think we started to see the tide turn 4 or 5 minutes before the end of the game. And effectively, and Kevin has admitted to this, effectively Drogheda just went so direct and almost went back to what they were this time last year. They had a great example of it. They had a free kick about 5 yards outside their own box in Oriel Park, and they sent the 3 centre-halves up for it. He went really direct, and Kevin made no apologies for it, and put Dundalk under a huge amount of pressure. And it was almost going back to type from Drogheda, and a bit more what we've seen from them. And Kevin made reference about his players were trying to pass and they were getting robbed, and etc. But it was a huge win for them. They had no fans there for obvious reasons, and probably deservedly so, which is harsh on some of the great fans they have. But what happened at the start of the year, they couldn't take a risk of that being repeated. And I hope people have learned a lesson from that. But they celebrated on the pitch together in a huddle, because I think it was huge for them. I think they needed that win. It just settles them down a little bit. Although I think they'd be fine, I think they needed that win badly. And it was obviously two great moments from Shane Farrell, but he had a couple of other bits and pieces where he could have went further ahead. And then quickly on Dundalk, I mean, they've done this. They were very good against Shells as well the week before and didn't get that second goal, or didn't put the game to bed early when they were really dominant. So they allowed Drogheda back in, and it was a huge, huge, huge win for Kevin Doherty and Drogheda.
Another man who wasn't there for Dundalk, and they may have missed him, was Owen Kenny, who has moved to Portsmouth. They've triggered his release clause, which I believe was around €40,000. He signed a 3-year contract with the club on the South Coast, gone off to be managed by John Messina, who's a very good young manager. Vinny, a man that you would know, own Kenny, quite well. What do you make of this move?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, he's played a lot of men's football, so what level of does he go into a draw? Is what we'll all wait to see, or into Portsmouth, should I say. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I've seen Owen. Owen's a late developer. I mean, he used to, when we finished training, he'd take onto the pitch. And about 2 hours later, he'd rock into, whether it was Stephen's office or not, completely black with all of the sort of astroturf pebbles and everything on his face, through his hair. He was like someone that came down at the sweep of the chimney. He was that bad in it. Like, he loved the game. He was a real street footballer. In that sense, that's how he learned his trade with his other brother, Fiona, the two, particularly Owen, though. You could tell he was obsessed by football. And sometimes when you're obsessed by a sport or anything in life, you get the reward. So it's a huge opportunity for him. I think we've all been really impressed with him over the last sort of 6-12 months. And it was funny, I was chatting to Daryl Horgan before the Shelbourne game about this on the pitch, that like Owen was a 10, 12-year-old, 8-year-old, 9-year-old throughout sort of Daryl's last spell at Dundalk, and all of a sudden Daryl and Owen were so pivotal to everything he'd done and the support he gave at Ruby sort of 10 years later. And I've seen a great picture of Stephen and his two sons on the bench in Tala from 2016, and Owen looked so young then, and to see what he's achieved is brilliant from him. And it just shows you should never give up hope. And he didn't go the traditional way, he didn't play for a big Dublin schoolboy club or a big schoolboy club for that matter, and he's come through the academy effectively at Dundalk after his father moved there. And it's a real opportunity in Portsmouth, and while it won't be straightforward, it's a great story, and it's brilliant for him. And also, I think it'd be good to come out of the shadow of his father a little bit, play over there with a bit of freedom, and let's see how he gets on.
A man from the Inishowen Peninsula, Charlie, and we might stay in the Northwest because John Russell has left Sligo Rovers. He's made the trip up to the capital, up here, up where the big boys are. I'm only messing. But he's made the trip across. Lads, before we get on to what this means for Shelbourne, what does this mean for Sligo Rovers? John Russell has been in charge there for 4 years, obviously has been at the club as a player for multiple spells. He was there as an assistant manager as well. Gareth, you might touch on it first, because it feels like, albeit their bottom of the table, it feels like a huge blow for Sligo Rovers.
Yeah, it is. I mean, any time over the last 4 years that they were in trouble, John Russell seemed to be able to get them out of there with the players that he signed during the transfer window off season, mid season, loan signings. He got the best out of these players that were maybe discarded at other clubs. So losing that is huge. Now, we all know that football's crazy, and other teams will be looking at Sligo now, like vulture funds, and turn around and go, ooh, there's a bit of instability there. John's just left. They haven't got another appointment. It happened that quickly. I could now go and get 3 or 4 of their players. So I think Sligo have to kind of act pretty quickly and stabilise the club. Who they bring in next, God knows. I mean, there's a few people there already within the youth setup or the academy that could step in. You've got Conor O'Grady, who's a good safe set of hands. You've got maybe Gavin Pearce, someone like that, that's played with the club, been with the club, had success with the club. I think they need to go down that route again rather than going and getting an outsider.
Has Ryan Casey, Garrett, gone with him? Do we know his background staff yet? I haven't seen it, but Ryan was obviously assisting him, and Ryan had a great sort of underage career. He would have been part of a lot of Brian Carr's really successful squads, went to the UK, but Ryan's been his assistant for a good while. Has Ryan stayed at Sligo, do we know, or is he gone as part?
Yeah, Ryan Casey has stayed at Sligo, so he's expected to take a caretaker charge at least until they get a fixed manager in.
There you are. Maybe Ryan could step up. Maybe they'll give him a to the end of the season. That would be ideal. Keep the continuity. He knows the players, knows how they're going to get out of trouble. Maybe that would be the easy option, and then make sure at the end of the year that they get it right.
Gareth, you might stay on Sligo just for a second. They've brought in Jamie McGonigal on loan, who you know from his time in Derry. It feels like they've never really been able to replace Owen Elding, and look, that's such an easy thing to say because it's such an impossible player to replace, but they definitely have missed that vocal figure up top. We know Keane Kavanagh, who scored two at the weekend against Galway in that loss, obviously hasn't been able to produce the goods consistently throughout the season. That loss to Galway today means they're 7 points off their Connacht rivals. Waterford has obviously jumped them at the bottom. Where do you turn from here in terms of on the pitch stuff for Sligo Rovers?
Yeah, well, I mean, Jamie's a good player. Jamie kind of did really well at the start of his career at Derry. He scored a few goals, was an important part of the manager's plans at that time. Then he was replaced. He subsequently went to Coleraine, and then Rory Higgins, who was the manager at Derry, they got rid of him, went to Coleraine, and he didn't really get a look in. So he'll have a point to prove. He's hungry, he's quick, he's very, very good over the top. Very different to Keane Kavanagh and the Portuguese guy, I can't remember his name, that they have up there. He will be a good option for them because we know how good Sligo are, A, in the transition, but also in the counter-attack. So he'll have a point to prove. He'll be hungry. He's only on loan, so I would imagine he wants to go there and fight for a contract. I think if he does well, they could possibly keep him on, but he's got a big 6 months in not only his career, but also for Sligo to try and keep them out of those bottom two.
Vinny, then, on the other end of this managerial transfer, Shelburne, I mean, they've got Adrian Casey back as well, which is used to come back into centre half. But what do you expect to see from Shelburne, John Russell team?
I don't know. I mean, in many ways, like, there's a lot of pressure in terms of keeping the team in the Premier Division, and John has survived a lot of difficult moments in Sligo, but this is a different challenge, and he'll find that out fairly quickly. I've heard good noise and bad noise about disappointment. So what will be interesting for me is probably two things. One is, I think I use Shamrock Rovers as a great example. When Michael O'Neill left, Shamrock Rovers signed one of the great managers of all time, Stephen Kenny. Didn't work out. One of the great coaches of all time. I don't know him as coaching, but that's what I hear. Trevor Crawley, didn't work out. And a real winner and as a player and as a coach, and Pat Fennell. And it didn't really work out. And then they stumbled across Stephen Bradley, and the rest is history. So for those who are sure or not sure, whatever the case may be, from a Shelburne perspective, all you got to do is just give this man a chance. And sometimes your face fits in a club and it works, but sometimes it doesn't. And in many ways, it's no slight in the manager. So we don't really know. But what we do know is John likes to play a really good brand of football. And he's got really good footballers to do that in. And my only advice to John will be, and this is no slight on Duff or Joey, but they dragged Shelburne almost kicking and screaming to a league title, to European football. And sometimes that's a brilliant way to do it, but sometimes that doesn't last forever. So Gareth will know what I mean, but he's worked under people that are really hard taskmasters. And sometimes over time, you then get not sick of them, that sounds wrong, but you almost come to training with your shoulders a little bit slumped. And my advice to John was go in and give them a bit of freedom between now and the end of the season. And say to Meepo, say to Harry Wood, say to Jarvis, say to Daniel Kelly, you are brilliant footballers. Go and people are paying in to watch us because you're that good. Go and just entertain us and just be a free spirit. Because they have an outstanding football team. They're a great club, great fan base. And I think if John does that, as opposed to almost overcomplicating and trying to reinvent the wheel, but he has to make certain changes, of course. I think Shelburne's going to have a brilliant end of season and could end up guaranteeing Europe, being a top three side. I think they have that, and if the players to do that, it's a little bit into the unknown in many ways. But Don has great experience, and I've never heard anyone say a bad word about John. I'm sure there's the odd person, but he is one of the good guys in football. So I think we all hope it works out for him.
And the beauty about this, Ben, right, and Vinny, you'll know this as well, the Shelburne that Damien Duff stepped into and Joey O'Brien stepped into is completely different to the Shelburne that John Russell's just stepping into. And I'll tell you why. It all started in 2025. We talked about it during pre-season. Jamestown Analytics got involved in Shelburne Football Club, and they are now firmly involved in Shelburne Football Club. We're seeing that with the players that are playing, the types of players that they're signing, and now in the manager that they've appointed in John Russell. The beauty of John Russell will be doing exactly what he did with Sligo. Developing undervalued players and selling them on. And that's what Shelburne are going to do through Jamestown Analytics and Tony Bloom's Lizard community. And what he'll be able to do, they will take care of the recruitment. They will get him some of the best young players and undervalued players between about 50,000 and about 300,000, like Oran Casey, like Freitas, like Lundergan. And he will then be able to coach them. And if you notice that, he's been appointed coach, not manager. So what the power that Duff had and the power that O'Brien had, John won't have that, but it'll allow him to get on with what he's really, really good at. And I think it's a very, very good appointment by Shelburne, and it's exactly what they need. Because getting John Russell in to coach players, make them better, give them confidence, and get Shelburne back towards the top, it's a great opportunity for him, especially the support structures that they have off the pitch. Shelburne, I said in 2025, it was the best bit of business. There was managers moving at that time. There was players moving at that time. It was the best bit of business that was going to reshape League of Ireland football, was Jamestown Analytic getting an exclusive agreement with Shelburne. You look what they did with Hearts. We all know the Brighton story, right? You look what they did with Hearts and Royal Union at Belgium. I'll give you an idea. They took Royal Union. They were in the second tier, right? They had history previously. They were in the second tier. They took them back to the top, won the league in 2025, and they're consistently in Europe. And they're buying players on the cheap, developing them, and then selling them on. And that's exactly what they do want to do now at Shelburne. So they've got Shelburne for players. If you look at the multi-club ownership, it's kind of like what they're doing, only they don't have massive ownership. Anybody worth 50,000 to maybe 250,000 will go to Shells. Anybody above that, 200,000 to half a million will go to Hearts. And then above that, they have Union. Above that, they have Brighton. It's some model, and Shelburne are going to reap the rewards of it.
One thing they will certainly have to do if they want to reap rewards is convince Harry Wood to stay. His contract is till the end of the season. There's strong, strong interest from teams in England. If you're a manager, Vinny, and you're going into a dressing room like that, and you have a player who has big interest, and I'm sure there's a lot more money on the table from clubs across the pond, what do you say to him?
I don't think the money across the water is as much of a difference as it once was. Depending on what type of club comes in, obviously if Championship come in above and high-end League One, you probably can compete. But a lot of big foreign clubs are paying really healthy money at the moment. So I think what you try and do is, bring down the end of the season is an audition for John Russell and Shelburne when it comes to Harry Wood. What's the mood? And that's why I touched on it. I mean, the mood in the camp, is it one that you feel you can back as a player? Is it one you feel there's growth in here? And ultimately getting back into Europe. And if John Russell gets them back into Europe, well, then I think the keeping of Harry Wood's a lot easier. I don't think the financials of it will be that difficult. I think they will have enough power to get close to what needs to be done. I think Europe is huge if you want to hold on to Harry Wood. Because if you're not in Europe as a player, in League of Ireland terms, it's difficult. It's difficult to hold on to them. So that's the key. And then John has to start building relationships now between him and the end of the season with these type of players. And once they know there's something nice happening or something good or a journey's underway, it's easier to keep them than the cloud that was hanging over the club a little bit at the back end of Joey's tenure, unfortunately, was there for us all to see. As much as he's done a tremendous job, it was difficult to hold on to players at that stage, you would feel.
Well, his first task is going to be Kerry this weekend in the FAI Cup. They will play in Europe next week against either Naumkallu or Linfield. Of course, Linfield manager David Healy was linked to that Shelburne job for as well, which would have been interesting, but not to be. We're going to stay.
Did Russell lose a game to Kerry, did he, at some stage?
In the FAI Cup, yes. Sligo Rovers lost to Kerry very infamously in the FAI Cup. True lead away against Kerry. So that'll be interesting to see how that one pans out in Mount Hawk Park this weekend.
Hello, it's Owen Chahan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
We're going to stay in Europe, lads. Last night, Shamrock Rovers managed to turn around their 2-0 defeat in their opening leg in Malta against Floriana. 5-1 win on the night. 5-3 in aggregate. Lee Grace, John McGovern double, Graham Burke and Jack Byrne. A very healthy crowd in Tala as well, it should be said, considering there was a small matter of the World Cup semi-final coinciding with this game. But Gareth, a 5-1 win after some discontent after the 2-0 loss last week. And it's, let's be honest, Shamrock Rovers looked very, very good for that 5-1 win.
Yeah, incredibly impressive. I saw the highlights. I didn't. I was flicking between both, but I'll be honest with you, the World Cup semi took most of my attention, but I saw the highlights. I mean, some great goals. You could see once the first goal went in, the players' reaction. I mean, they're at this stage now where, and in fairness, it's their own doing, not only the coefficient, but their confidence in Europe is just growing. Like, we would have went into those sort of games 10 years ago going, hopefully we can get through. Shamrock Rovers, after the first goal and even after the first leg, after the defeat, they didn't really look under pressure or in any way kind of undermined it to go through in the tie. I mean, Stephen Bradley, the players, the interviews afterwards, they kind of knew what they were up against after the first leg and says, we've got the beating of these at home. Obviously, the crowd would have helped as well. So unbelievable. Statement performance, and all those young players that they're breeding through and they're in the transition, what an experience for them.
That, come here.
That's exactly
Can I stop you for a second? The crowd, you both mentioned it. I'm not that popular in Tala anyway, so it's grand. But it's the Champions League. Round one, your team is losing 2-0. What was the crowd then?
I'm going to get the exact figure for you here. I did see the images of it last night and it was quite good. The only thing I will say to that, Vinny, is like... the World Cup semi-final was on. Like if you're not attending a Shamrock Rovers game every week and you're hemming and hawing, am I going to go out to this? Am I going to not? You have France versus Spain on the TV at home.
Yeah, but this isn't a dig at Shamrock Rovers, or it's more a dig at. I accept it was outside of the Champions League final and the World Cup final. It was a huge night, particularly two teams that are involved, but. It wasn't plain sailing for Rovers. That game went 1-1, if you remember, last night early. And I always felt Rovers would win it. They're way ahead of the team they played against. And Gareth said, when we played them teams, the problem is, Gareth, we probably didn't play them teams because you never got a team from Malta in the fourth round draw because we were seeded against them. And the new coefficients and the way UEFA have set up this competition for champions, being the champions of Ireland, have failed if they're not in the group stage. In the conference, I would say now. Unless something odd happens where there's a team qualifies from somewhere that's exceptional, if you know what I mean, and you play them in the playoff round with no coefficient going into it. So, or whatever, or losing a playoff game for the conference can come and go. But just think, I thought the number was around 5,000, Ben.
It was 5,466 in Tala last night.
Yeah, I think if St. Pat's had played a league game last night, there still would have been 4,000 plus. This is the Champions League. My criticism isn't of Shamrock Rovers, it's of us as a sporting nation, particularly soccer. Champions League is in town. It is the Champions League proper. The final of this will be played in the middle of next year. I get it, but it's still Champions League football. And if we're going to take our football serious in this country, we could deal with more than 5,400 people throwing up to a Champions League game when our team is one of our teams is 2-0 down. That's all.
Well, what I will say is they have Ararat Armenia in the next round, which is a huge chance to reach round three for Shamrock Rovers, which would guarantee group stage football. It would guarantee at least Conference League football. But with that tie for the next round and how well Rovers have played in Europe through the last couple of years, like we talked about the coefficient, they have earned this coefficient from their performances in Europe. They've been exceptional. Should the aim now to be in the Europa League phase for Rovers from here on in?
Yes, I think their team of the last couple of years, I think they're in a bit of transition at the moment, and I think they might find it a little bit harder this year, but they should be chasing Europa League. I mean, the finances for both of them, in many ways you might earn more by being in the conference because you'll win some of the group matches, if you know what I mean, or you're more likely to win some of them. So there's not a lot in the difference prize money-wise, but I think they want to test themselves against better teams. I think what will happen is if they got to the Europa group stage, they would probably draw two really top teams, and the crowds and the returns for those top games would be huge. But they're more likely to win games in the conference. So, yeah, and by the way, they've earned that coefficient in 2021-22, this competition came in. And whoever was champions of Ireland at that time had a huge advantage with the finances that was coming with it. And Rovers have used that and exploited it really well. And again, I'm not that popular down in Tala anyway, so I don't care, but people will think I'm having a go at the club. I'm not. I'm just saying, sell out our Champions League games. They don't come around that often. Get our backsides off and go and watch them, you know. Whether that's the next round of it, it should be a sold-out sign down in Tala for the next round of that competition. It should be. It's huge. Second round Champions League. Huge.
This next round, Ben, won't be as easy. Armenia, we played out there. Yerevan, it's a different standard of team. But Rovers should have no problem competing with them. But it'll be a tighter tie.
But they went out to FC Riga. They lost 3-2 last night. That's it, Gareth. It's a winnable tie, but you're right. Armenia will be difficult and will have its own challenges in terms of what comes with it. So the Riga side, I know even some of the players still. So 4-3, the Riga were knocked out by the Armenians. So it's not an insurmountable task. And if they win that group stage Europa League, definitely on. It's definitely on. And I think we all hope Rovers do that. I think it'd be the next stage for Bradley and his group. And as a football club, I think Shamrock Rovers deserve to test themselves now at the next level.
Yeah, and I think the money side of it as well. I mean, commercially, broadcasting rights and all that, the Europa League, the two teams, hopefully they are high level, that they will get far more money. I mean, those deals alone will bring in far more money than won a couple of matches in the Conference League.
The Ararat have won the Armenian Premier League 3 times. Last season was their first year winning it since 2020. Obviously, we know Noah have came from that league in the last couple of years and have faced big sides in the Conference League. Definitely a big chance anyway for Shamrock Rovers. I would imagine you're not going to face many lower seeded teams in the second round of the Champions League. Vinny, I'll make sure that you and me will get down to that, and we'll make sure you're treated well in Tala Stadium for that one, right?
I'm always treated well in Tala, to be fair.
Well, I'll make sure.
Except when I bring Dundalk down there and we win 1-0, then I'm not.
Don't let them ever forget that, eh? Who's counting that though? Gareth, we will move on to one of the other clubs involved in Europe, the next ranked side, I suppose, in the Europa League, Derry City, a 3-2 loss in Sofia last week, but an 89-minute goal from James Olayinka, which could be huge ahead of Thursday night's game in the Brandywell.
Yeah, massive. I mean, you're talking there about crowds. Before that, there was probably 50% of the season tickets had been sold for the European game. After that, it went up to 80-82% of the tickets being sold. So that gives you an idea of the goal. The tie was tough. It was a tough, they're not a bad side. Obviously, it's their first game. That was their first competitive game back since their outbreak. at 3-1, it looked like the Sofia was going to run away with it. It looked as if they might get another one and even another one after that. But fair play to the Derry players. And even off the back of the bad result against Waterford, that's the one thing and the credit you'd probably have to give these Derry players. See, whenever it looks to be going really bad and one more bad result would just mean the whole thing just falls apart, they seem to be able to pull a result up. So hopefully it's Thursday night at home to Sofia. I know a couple of the players didn't get their visas approved, so don't quote me on this, but I think it might be the keeper and another player. So that hopefully gives Derry a lift. Then they've got the return of Brandon Fleming and Adam O'Reilly as well back into the team. So Derry are a healthy enough position. Again, chasing one goal, you don't need to go and get it in the first hour. If you hold on and hold the Sofia, they'll start getting nervous. Obviously, the Brandywell crowd will start getting back behind the team, and you just never know.
Yeah, two Belarusian players in the Siska side, goalkeeper Fyodor Lakhapov and midfielder Max Ebong, both denied visas, still in the process and calculating stage of getting visas for that tie on Thursday night. Both the assists from Derry came from Michael Duffy. And when you're looking for a man in a European stage to produce the goods, Michael Duffy never fails, lads.
Unless he's having a baby.
Oh, we all remember this one, Vinny.
Yeah, so do I.
But again, as I said 5 minutes ago with Tala Stadium, who's to remember any sort of old stories and hold any sort of grudges, you know?
No, that's true. Fair enough. No, we still won the tie, so everything was okay. If we hadn't have won the tie, I'm not sure I'd have been okay with it. But, we were out in Riga, Gareth, and Emily is Michael's wife's name. Jeez, I should remember. But she was having a baby, obviously, and Michael didn't travel. So we changed the team around ever so slightly. And his great buddy Patrick ended up on the left wing. We didn't have loads of wingers at that stage. And Patrick filled into him as Patrick can do, you know.
I'm sure Patrick was buzzing going left wing for the game. There's nothing worse getting pulled out of the middle. They go in the wing. It's an absolute graveyard. Away, was it? Away from home as well.
Away in Riga. We won on penalties. Actually, Gary Rogers made a brilliant save. Fourth round Champions League. We didn't have the same safety net back then as a Conference League. So, but winning in the fourth round is huge. It sets you up for the whole year. The rewards for it are huge. But come here, Michael has done it. Like, the best goal I've seen in League of Ireland was Michael's volley back post in Europe, in Oriel Park against, come back to me before the end of the show, but I mean, Michael is there for the big moments, isn't he? And he seems to be getting almost cleverer on the pitch as he gets older, being able to play narrow at different stages and when to come narrow. So he'll be huge for them. Still a huge task. Like, they're early in the season, but it's still a huge task for Derry. There's almost an expectancy. Oh, it's 3-2. But it's still a huge task to knock that type of a side out. And if he did, it'd be one of the great results of League of Ireland.
I tell you what, they've some good players as well watching the first leg. And I tell you what, when them players turn up and they see that beautiful surface in the Brandywell, they're going to be rubbing their hands together, because the pitch wasn't great out there. It seemed to be quite dry and just wasn't prepared as well as maybe the middle of the season. But it's going to be a tough game. I mean, they've obviously got a tough tie after that, but off the back of that, should they go out, they've got a Croatian side, which won't be easy either.
Yeah,
Latvia talent. Sorry,
I was just about to say, Vinny, Latvia talent was Michael Duffy's goal.
Back post.
Yeah, I can remember that.
So, Tariq Wilson scored an amazing goal against Rovers a couple of weeks ago, Ben. And I was on commentary. I think it was with you, wasn't it?
It was indeed. And the very first thing you said, Vinny,
it was the second best goal we've ever seen in Oriel Park. in my time, should I say? My time. There's been goals before that.
That Siska Sofia side will certainly love that pitch. Pats, I remember, got a famous win out there a couple of years ago. Serge Atakai with a late goal, and then they crumbled in the second leg in Tala Stadium. Gareth, you play them yourselves as well, so you'll have fond memories of that to tell the lads back at Derry. There is, of course, one other side who were in European duty last week, And as I said, maybe it's the reason that Steve-O is in the little inlet at the bottom of Spain. Bowes beat St. Joseph's last week in a sunny Dalyman Park, a 2-0 win. They were made work for it. Alan Reynolds saw it, Douglas James Taylor penalty on the hour mark, and then a late Connor Parsons goal. You'd have to imagine the lads going away to St. Joseph's with a 2-0 lead. They'd be forced to come out and take the game to Bowes, and Bowes should be able to get over the line in that one.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I was out for the Derry Magpies last year, the year before, and Gibraltar team. I mean, we talked about it there in Malta. It's not a great standard. I don't see Bowes having any problem. The stadium's nice out there as well. Good surface. I see Bowes cruising to that, especially if St. Joseph have to come out a little bit.
I think the second goal is huge for obvious reasons, but I think that was huge. I think maybe that might be the difference from the end of the game, but I wouldn't be shocked if Derry were to draw or lose that game and still go through. That's how I think it'd be a very, very tight game just because it's on the edge. But hopefully you would say there's a great chance that Rovers obviously are through. Hopefully Bowes are through. The Derry one is not so straightforward, is it?
No, it's certainly not. Here's one for you lads, right? I was at that game last week working for Off the Ball, the Bohemians game against St. Joseph's. And I was wondering about the striker for St. Joseph's, Francisco Ferron. I think he's 34, 35 years of age. He's on to his 15th or 16th club. And I was having a chat with Steve-O down on the pitch after the game. And we said, would we ever see League of Ireland sides taking a punt on a striker like that? Because I tell you, lads, he looked like he had serious quality.
The answer to that is staring us out in the face. It's a bit like, it drives me off the wall when I think about, say, someone like Jason Bourne. Do you remember Garrett? That's a great example. You were playing that time. He wasn't good enough for what was deemed the top club at the time. So he went back to Bray and scored 20 goals or something like that. But it was in the same league. It's a bit like Pahubin. I think Pahubin would score goals for almost all of our clubs. But he hasn't. He's moved it to Niffel, obviously, and Pat's into his 30s now. I think sometimes we write off centre-forwards a little bit too early, and Padraig Amond is probably the best example of it. I think Padraig Amond is as good as any other striker from the finishing point of view. And do you have to manipulate your team around to suit a Holborn, a Jason Bourne type, or a Padraig Amond? Yes, you do. But as a player, we're seeing Messi going to do it tonight. Not Messi, he's going to stand there and scratch his backside while the rest of them work until they get the ball, and then he'll come alive. And he played the centre-forward, and our centre-forward will become the number 10. Watch it tonight. So you've got to make allowances for these great, but putting the ball in the back of net is still the hardest job of football. Therefore, we should see players like that still playing. And that's my answer.
But Ben, to your point as well, I mean, St. Joseph's, the Gibraltarian League is like, we've come so far compared to that. Now, I know you're saying the guy might have been had quality and stuff like that, but do not underestimate. You mentioned, Vinny mentions Ammon there. Like, would that guy be able to do Friday, Monday for two seasons in a row and not get injured? I mean, I think I understand what you're saying. He had a couple of nice touches and all that, but don't underestimate the league at the minute, the intensity, the fitness, how you have to keep your body. That's why the players that are over 32, Amond, Gaffney, all these boys, they are keeping themselves so well. It is so difficult to maintain that level of fitness. So somebody coming over from the Gibraltarian League, I don't think would stand a chance.
I'll just add to that, Gareth, and I'll say that by about the 72nd minute, I'd say, there's about four Gibraltar lads pulling up, looking for the physio to come on with a bit of cramp. Keeper went off.
Yeah, but Ben, they're out of season as well, to be fair to them.
They're out of season.
And summer football has helped us. I was around for that switch of time. I was playing at the time. It was 2007, 8, around that time. And it's definitely helped us. It's a huge part. I don't think we'd be as successful if we hadn't switched to summer football in Europe.
No chance. And listen, Niffel have to do it as well. I mean, they're talking about it. They keep talking about it. They will probably get the same sort of success as we're getting if they did it.
Well, I think last year's game between Shelburne and Linfield, the two games were kind of that really just proved it. And while Linfield maybe, okay, put them up to it in the first game, that game, I can remember that game up at Windsor Park when Ali Coote and Harry Wood just looked like, and I know, look, they probably are a level above them anyway, but the fitness levels were just stark difference between the pair of them. So they are the European ties on this week, and as of course we already know Shelburne will be in it next week to maybe play Linfield again. We have the small matter of the FAI Cup this weekend, the Club Orange Men's FAI Cup. A couple of tasty ties in there, as we said. Kerry versus Shelburne. John Russell heading back to Mount Hawk Park. St. Mochta's are going to host Dundalk. Pats are going to play Wexford. We've got a Munster derby in Waterford and Cove Ramblers. Shamrock Rovers and Cork City is the TV game on Friday night. You might notice the one club that I have not mentioned there is Bohemians. And that is because, as we all know by now, Ringmahon Rangers forfeited the tie against Bowes, have ended up with a 5-year ban from the senior competition, a 40,000 fine, a 3-year ban from the Intermediate Cup as well. Vinny, any thoughts, any particular thoughts on this whole fiasco?
Yeah, loads. I think, and I won't say too many of them, to be fair. I think football is, Irish football is the people's game, okay? 100%. That's why I get annoyed looking at the current World Cup, to go back to it real quick. I think if Ireland had a qualified, I think corporate Ireland be there and not proper Irish fans. Why? It's too bloody expensive, okay? I think corporate Ireland would hoover up all the tickets and we'd be priced out of it to a certain extent. Obviously, the FAI have to hold on to certain amount of tickets. Anyway, the point I'm trying to make is it is just about still a working class man's game, okay? The time and effort that goes into running Ringmahon Rangers is absolutely huge on it. And almost 90.9% of it is done on a volunteer basis. I get all of that, okay? But the intermediate for them clubs is the holy grail. And I still think it's the case, getting to a certain point in the intermediate qualifies you for the FAI Cup. The FAI Cup is our cup. I've played intermediate football. I've played senior football. So I get all of the troubles they have, but to do what they've done is an absolute disgrace, and it's a kick in the teeth to Irish football. Grassroots, junior football, intermediate football, senior football in this country all strive for the one thing. And they've just made a mockery of us, a mockery of the game, and they've just shown no care for anybody else other than themselves. It is a disgraceful decision they made. Absolute farce. They should be ashamed of themselves, and the book that was thrown at them wasn't heavy enough in my view, okay? They should have been demoted from intermediate football as well, and kept away from that level of football. If you don't respect the highest club competition of our association, football, then you don't deserve to be able to take part in it, or the early rounds of intermediate football, any of that stuff. It is a disgrace what they've done, and it diminishes the competition this weekend. It's a story that we shouldn't have people talking about and laughing and joking about Irish football. It is completely wrong, and I can't be any stronger than that without going too far. So I just think they should be ashamed of themselves.
As someone who has participated, 2 years, lads, have participated in a lot of FAI Cup, and I know some FAI Cup final experience and medal experience here as well. Like, you talk about...
But Ben, sorry, I don't want this to sound... Sometimes if you say what you've done, it comes across the wrong way. Probably my intermediate medal is still the one medal of all the FAI Cups or whatever I treasure most, because of where it came from and what it led to and the man I won it for and all of that stuff. If you play intermediate football, winning an intermediate cup is huge. You get to a certain stage in the intermediate, links you to an FAI Cup. It's just a progression, all interlinked. And for a club to disrespect that, I just can't fathom it. particularly, as I said, all of the good volunteer work they do to provide football for people, etc., etc., in outlay. And then just to disrespect our holy grail, I just can't get my head around that.
Yeah, it's typical of any Ben of society these days. It's so short-sighted, it's incredible. It's so emotional, it's so short-sighted, this decision. I mean, look at all the players that have been affected by this, not only this year in the current squad, but all the players coming up who want to play with Ring's End. It's madness. It's crazy. I think, I mean, I played intermediate as well. What Vinny's saying is kind of like what people always look at the GAA. It means more when you're playing with the club that you were brought up or it was right on your doorstep. And it does that. So there's players now that are going to play with Ring Mahon that aren't going to experience that and aren't going to experience playing in the FA Cup. It's so sad, so sad, so short-sighted.
And the team they beat, by the way, they've beaten somebody who lost the opportunity of this as well. By the way,
just to give you a run through, Gareth, you might have noticed that I forgot Derry City. Derry City will play Talca Rovers on Sunday, which would mean that on Sunday we will have Derry City against Talca Rovers. You'll have the World Cup final at 8 p.m. and you'll have Limerick versus Galway in the All-Ireland Hurling final. So no Cork teams playing in any sort of code on Sunday afternoon. Vinny Pert, Gareth McGlynn, thank you very much for joining me for this week's edition of the League of Ireland pod.
I hope Steve-O's back next week, Ben. Not because of anything got to do with you, but I'll put you this way. If Bowles lost, I don't think he'd come back next week. I think he'd take another week off.
I won't take that to heart, Finney.
He's safe. He'll be back.
I reckon just about Bowles should have enough to get over that one. And if they don't, I'll come in here myself and drag him into the office with me. Lads, thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening, folks, as well. And I hope you enjoy all the FAI Cup action this weekend. Slán live.
The LOI Pod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.